It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Now we take a break from the news to make space for some poetry.
James Lenfesty was born and raised in De Pere and has written 7 collections of poetry over his 7 decades of life.
In Lenfesty's new collection, he explores the aging body in a section called Body Odes.
He asks his left hand, how did you get so strange?
His belly, why is it you thicken with age like curd?
He celebrates his heart, which the cardiologist tells him looks good.
And he praises the powers of the hyoid bone, the only bone in the body not connected to any other.
James Lenfesty is a poet and journalist. His forthcoming collection is called Time Remaining, Body Odes, Praise Songs, Oddities, Amazements. James, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
A delight to be with you. I'm a Wisconsin boy, born and raised.
Oh, we're going to get into that.
Okay, cool.
But we're going to first have you read a poem to bring us together. It's the first poem in your book, The Invocation, and it's called Where Poets Go. Can you read that for us?
I will. I'll give you a little background. It's dedicated to a gentleman named Richard or Dick Moore, who, since you're on public radio, well, no, he was the founder of California Public Radio and then the first station manager for public TV in San Francisco. And then he came to the Twin Cities. And I got to know him and found out that his whole life he viewed himself as a poet. He went way back to the California Renaissance of Poetry with various famous people back then. And so he retired back to California. And when he passed away at the age of 95, I visited him many times in California in his incredible, what I call his monk cell in assisted living in his 90s. And he was still climbing mountains in his 80s. And he... And so I wrote this elegy for him, and it went much farther than I had in mind, of course, when I started, because it's called Where Poets Go for Dick Moore, 1920 to 2015. And 2 other notes. I was and still am a journalist of sorts, although I've written now 16 books of poems and anthologies, which is my great love, but it's all a love of language. But I'm a fact-based poet. Everything that's in here is all true. So the first 2 lines are, where poets go, the Protestant cemetery in Rome, tomb of Keats' bubbled blood, and Shelley's beach-scorched bones. And I'm going to give you a little note about that. Keats died of tuberculosis in Italy and is buried there. And Shelley died in a sailing accident offshore, and his friends burned his bones on the beach. So now I'll start over with those first 2 lines, and we'll go from there. Where poets go. The Protestant cemetery in Rome, tomb of Keats' bubbled blood and Shelley's beach-scorched bones. The couch in Oregon, housing Stafford's quiet pad, his quiet pen. The cobbles of worn Nazareth, where Taha Muhammad Ali crafted peace in poems inside his tiny trinket shop. And Dick Moore's monk cell and assisted living in Marin, where he knew the spine of every book and made an eye-blind whiteboard sing exquisite blindness sonnets. And these are 3 of his lines. It is not a fair exchange, light for dark. So much remains on the other side of light. A world lost is never a fair exchange. I remember digging a hole for our dog, deep as I could among tangled cedar roots, and my daughter could not put him in. My wife could not put him in. What poems he wrote with his generous tongue. Poets earn no better place on earth than dogs or soldiers shot and rotting in a trench. All get our one slim slice of soil or air, organs plucked by condors like cello strings. Hymned by fungus, dug by moles, a modest cloud of ragged smoke. But listen. A poem by Sappho was just discovered in an ancient dump in broken Egypt. Unfurled now from papyrus junk, the whole world trembled as burnished sheaves flowered into Greek, twice sung already in English, as the Islamic State blasts and burns the stone remains of Nineveh. So many fragments in the rubble. Songs sung at dawn before the battle lost. A mother before an infant's bed. A man encanting a lover's chin. a child chanting charms against the dark. And Dick Moore's suite of sonnets arriving 10 days past his death in a book bright as Milton's Angel, a brilliant stop to time. Tuberculosis stilled the lungs of Keats and Stephen Crane, my hero. Seawater filled up Shelley with cobalt blue. Emily claimed the apt name Bright's disease. And Dick Moore, the final tick of sturdy clock at 95. Some dumb thing will silence me. A blow to the head, a drunken fender, the creaking of the clock, bird flu. And you? And you? So cobble up a shrine before you die, a dogged hole entangled in the roots of words. Inspire to fill the mind with grace. Expire, breathe out a final song.
Thank you so much for reading that. When we are to cobble together this shrine with meaningful words, I wonder, when did you start to see yourself as a poet?
So in Deep Here, Wisconsin, where I grew up, which is about 4,000 people at the time, this is in the, born in 44, it was not uncommon to have somebody in your little town who could paint portraits of people. And we had one right down the street, this extraordinary woman. So my mother took my older sister down to that portrait painter, and she painted my oldest sister as a princess, and she remained a princess her whole life. She painted my next sister in a very vigorous dance mode. She was a toe dancer at the time. We're talking 6 years old or five. And she, to this day, she's 82, is an incredible physical therapist, hiker, skier, dancer, unbelievable. She's a complete physical being. Then my mother took me down, 3 years old. I can't believe I was three, except I have the portrait in my office and the date doesn't lie. She walked in with me and the painter looked at me and said, put me on a chair and said, that boy needs a book in his hands. I was 3 years old. I've had a love affair with books since I was 3 years old. I have no memory of being three, that except that I have that portrait. Let me fast forward to maybe a decade or so ago, about the time of the beginning of this collection of poems, when I came upon this astounding phrase by perhaps America's greatest, most inspiring writer, Emerson. And the phrase is, language is fossil poetry. And think about that. It's true. Every syllable that I am inserting into your ears through the airwaves of Wisconsin Public Radio and to your listeners, everyone has a history. And some of them were invented yesterday, and some of them were invented 10,000 years ago. And doesn't that just blow your mind? Every word is fossil poetry. And so I've gone on many, many treks down the rabbit hole of the fossil poetry of every word in a fascination that goes back to much of my life. I will say I went to Dartmouth College. They had one class in creative writing, and I took it.
One class.
One class at the time. Now we all have MFA programs everywhere. I went to the graduate school at the University of Wisconsin for a master's. Loved it, by the way. And there was one class in creative writing. I took it. And I remember this because the year is 1967. And the visiting poet sent his students off. He said, go bring back a poet you love. And I ran off to the university's rare book vault. I remember just blasting off to the rare book vault and pulling out copies of Robert Bly's little magazine, the 50s and the 60s. There were two things probably that sent me there, and this is at the core of my learning to love poetry. One is he was very active in the anti-war movement and used poetry as part of that and went around the country. He started a group called Poets and Writers Against the War in Vietnam, and it was very public. Not parenthetically, in Minneapolis, I started a group called Poets, Writers, and Musicians Against the War on the Earth. entirely modeled after what Robert did. So the second thing, however, and this is relevant to all your listeners in this part of the world, I sense the fragrance of corn stubble in his poems, a familiar Midwestern landscape. That here was a poet who set up his writing life on a row crop farm in Western Minnesota, corn and beans, mm-hmm. And became one of the most consequential poets of the last 60 years. Who knew such a thing could happen? And yet he did that and became my mentor. And oddly, in an astounding circumstance, he moved in next door for the last 15 years of his life.
Oh, wow.
That doesn't happen either, but no. It did happen. And I actually organized his funeral when he passed away. But it's a fascination with the sound of words, the roots of words, the long vowels, which entrance us. Robert Bly has a wonderful essay called The Seven Holy Vowels. And you can hear them in Yeats. We will arise and go now and go to Innisfree. Hear those vowels just roll over the horizon. So those are some of the things. I've always been entranced by the pieces of language and how it goes together. But I opened with that poem because I wanted people to realize what persists through all of this. And the answer is art. Mm. And so when I say, you know, my friend Dick Moore's poems are still with us. Hopefully mine will be, but Yeats' poems are with us. And of course, the great, all art, I don't know if you remember the Islamic State blasting and burning the stone remains of Nineveh was an absolute calamity. But then they found this old poem, you know, 3,000 years old, 2,500 years old. And it still sings to us. So art gives us hope because art is persistent.
We are talking with poet James Lenfesti about his new collection. It's called Time Remaining, Body Odes, Praise Songs, Oddities, Amazements. James, the first section of your book is odes about various parts of the body. And the first one is an ode to your ankle, which you wrote after you seriously injured it. Can you tell us about that poem and the ode to the ankle?
So I've always loved the Odes Elementales of Pablo Neruda, mostly as translated by Robert Bly and others. But I love Neruda's flow. They flowed like a waterfall down the page, long and narrow columns, kind of like Angel Falls in Yosemite, you know, bouncing down off rocks. And I love that long, free-flowing form. And then, believe it or not, on an island in Michigan, Mackinac Island, where my wife and I live in the summer, I went to a lecture by a Neruda scholar, and he told us the most amazing detail. He said, you know how he invented that form, that long, narrow form for his elemental odes? I said, none of us knew, of course. He said, he had a pal who owned a newspaper in Caracas. Mm. And the guy said, I'll publish any of your poems, but they have to fit in a newspaper column. And doesn't that blow your mind? I mean, here's the, you know, the Nobel Prize-winning beloved poet. That's how he came up with this form. So I had just heard that lecture, and the following day I skidded out of my socks on a bike rack and tore the daylights out of my ankle. So and that tore a couple of tendons loose. They were frolicking around on my ankle. And I was lying in bed wondering where this would go, and I wrote Ode to the Ankle, and the rest is history. It just, the ode gates opened.
The ode gates, the body parts. Yeah.
Ode to the ankle. Then I looked down at my hand, at my left hand. Oh, what's that story? And then what about this belly of mine or yours? And on and on. And then, of course, the heart.
Yeah. So your ankle really confined you to a bed for that recovery, but poetry really freed you to go anywhere.
Totally. Totally. It was just an amazing moment. So, and the form, you know, poets generally need a container in which to put the poem, just like, the frame for a painter. Mm-hmm. And I had many delightful years working in the Chinese style form of the shi, and which is, again, eight lines, more or less. And this container sent me in a whole other ecstatic direction. There's much, much joy and astonishment in these poems because of the ability to keep going, to just let the images leap down the page, mm-hmm. one after the other after the other.
James, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your words.
It's a great honor to be with you in my beloved state of Wisconsin and not be hysterical over the election.
I appreciate our conversation very much. Take care.
Same to you, and all best to your listeners.
That was Wisconsin native poet James Lenfesty. Lives in Minneapolis, talked with us about his new collection. It's called Time Remaining, Body Odes, Praise Songs, Oddities, Amazements.